Welcome to the Prime People Podcast, where we cover all things that got us to where we are today, our team building strategies, the marketing and sales tips that we've learned through thousands of transactions, productivity tips, ways to really just hold yourself accountable to accomplishing what you want to accomplish, and all things content creation, personal development, and not to mention we have some of the best guests on the planet. Welcome to the Prime People Podcast. Today we have Kate Volman, the CEO of Floyd Consulting. She is one of the best people on the planet that I have seen at helping people find the best version of themselves. She is an eternal optimist and she's an incredible podcaster herself. I have been on her show, so make sure you give her a follow. And one thing that Kate's done for me is really made me bring back my love for writing. She has a strategy when it comes to newsletters and content creation that we're going to dive into. But first, I just wanted to welcome you to the Prime People Podcast, Kate.
Justin, thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited we're doing this.
Yeah, I'm super pumped. And I mean, the reason I do this podcast is to give people a glimpse into the world that I get to play in, where I meet people like you, and you've definitely impacted me in terms of, like I said, even something as simple as the daily habit of writing or diving deep into YouTube, because I know, you know, we've crossed paths with some of the same people like Think Media, Sean Cannell, and we know what the power of YouTube can do. We know what the power of writing can do, but why don't you give the audience a little bit of your backstory and then we'll jump into some tactical stuff.
Yeah, I mean, my background, I've worked with entrepreneurs and leaders most of my career. I started my career at a chamber of commerce, so I learned so much about entrepreneurship and philanthropy and advocacy. And that was way back when social media started coming about, right? It was like back in like 2008. Yeah. And I, like so many other people, were intrigued by it. And I just kind of jumped in and tried to figure this stuff out. And I started doing videos and I started doing podcasting before it was a thing. And so I got really excited to learn more about that. And obviously my career path has been one that has been really fun and exciting. And I've really enjoyed it. Although, I mean, and like I said, most of the work that I've done has been working with entrepreneurs. I was at the Chamber of Commerce for about 8 years. I developed all their programs, their women's program and their CEO programming. And I got to bring in really incredible speakers and work with them on really learning more about the needs of an entrepreneur. Like, what do they need? How do they need support? And then I went off to become the marketing director for the City of West Palm Beach Community Redevelopment Agency. So again, I got to use some marketing and also learn a lot about business and networking and how people can really grow a business locally. And then I started a marketing company. And now I run this incredible coaching company founded by Matthew Kelly, who wrote the book, The Dream Manager. So we get to certify dream managers and I get to do lots of other creative work because that is what I think we all need to do, is tap into our creativity.
Well, your two podcasts, The Lead with Culture and The Create for No Reason, I mean, both of those are so integral in the things that you teach, right? You've always talked about culture first, and you really talked about just creating for no reason. So can you expand on maybe the inception for both of those and what those mean to entrepreneurs today?
Yeah. So Create for No Reason, I started with a friend of mine, like so many others during the pandemic. And it was really a passion for loving the conversation around the creative process and what that looks like and everything. I mean, you can look at writing, you can look at entrepreneurship. It's all a practice, right? Like, we have to show up every day and it can be really challenging. We have to have that mental toughness. We have to put in the reps every day. And so I really enjoy that podcast because it's all about, what are you doing to tap into your creativity, whether it's your business or it's these passion projects that people have. These, some people might call them side hustles if you're trying to earn a living, but for some people, it might be singing, dancing, art, photography, things that they just love doing on the side just for the fun of it. And so it was really this idea to help people understand that you are creative. We are all creative. We're all artists of our own life. And so to really tap into that creativity. And then Lead with Culture was a very intentional podcast for Floyd Coaching because we really wanted to talk to more leaders and explore CEOs and executives and people that were leading a team. What are the challenges that you're going through? How are you managing a team? How are you coaching a team up to help them become the best version of themselves so that ultimately your organization can become the best version of themselves? And so we get to talk to really incredible people like yourself, Justin. You've been on the show. And we get to talk to dream managers that are out in the world serving as the life coach for their people to really help them rediscover their dreams and become the best version of themselves.
Well, I think there's an intersection, and I'm just looking off screen for a specific reason because I want to share something with you and the audience, and it's an example of exactly what you just talked about. So let me hit the screen share button, see if I can just present this, and I'm going to share a photo, and this is a photo of the sunset in Grand Bend. So this is one of the markets that I cover, right? So I'm sitting here with a Canon R5 right next to me because I love photography and I always have. The reason I'm sharing this is these are photos I took when I was at the beach of that area. This is a little pub in Bayfield. And whenever I'm out and about, I'm trying to take photos of the sunsets and I'm trying to showcase to people how beautiful this area is because maybe they want to live there. And I think what you're sharing is, you know, by searching for the things that you love and the beauty in life, whether it be art, music, writing, photography, whatever those things may be, there's a way to take that and interconnect that with who you are as a person and your business and let them layer. So yes, I own a real estate brokerage. Yes, we sell a lot of properties in these areas, but like there is a way to find love and joy in what you do beyond just making your business transactional. Over your period of time consulting with businesses and entrepreneurs and coaching them, how were you able to guide people to like find the joy again in businesses where sometimes it's just all about the numbers?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. Fortunately, I have worked with so many people that are similar to yourself. We have a real passion for business, right? Yeah. So like there's an art in business. And so for some 100%. People, it's like they have a love of the business and that's what it is. And you get to, and you feel that energy and you feed off that energy. And that is kind of one type of person. And then we work with a lot of people. We work with a lot of really great companies and organizations that are the leader of that organization is very culture focused on their people. They really want to help their people. And so though a lot of those people, they might, hey, I enjoy my work. I have a great job. My boss is awesome. And I get to come in and do some good work, but I want to go home and do lots of other things, right? Like they might not be so passionate about the business side, but they've kind of lost that spark. Like they go home, they feel very disengaged in life. They feel like, you know, it's like there's this meaning, this purpose that's missing. Yeah. And so I often will ask people the question, a couple questions. One, what did you love to do as a kid, right? Like when you were a little kid, what did you love to do? Did you love to art? Did you love to draw? Or did you love to write stories? What were some of those things? And then another question is, if I were to pay you $1,000 to learn something new, what would it be? Like, what would you want to learn? And I love that question because oftentimes so much of our passions, we say, oh, we don't have time to do it, or it doesn't really help us in business. And so we think that it doesn't matter. We think there's no reason to do it, instead of seeing it as, oh, if I actually tap in to maybe you want to learn a new language, or you take piano lessons or learn guitar, if you now attach it to, oh, I'm actually going to get paid to do it, then we see it a little bit differently. So think about, if I were to pay you, what would you really want to learn?
Yeah. And I think when you asked me that question, I'm like, oh, that's an interesting one too. Cause I think when you said, go back to a kid, what did you enjoy doing? It was taking pictures, right? And writing pretty much. Those two things were two of my favorite things to do. And if you asked me, what could you pay me to learn? I'm like, well, the writing course that I just showed you is what I would actually choose, and probably photography. Now, can I turn that around and apply it to my business and life? Absolutely. Because a lot of people look to us for real estate advice, right? What's happening with interest rates? The market's getting slammed. Should I buy? Should I sell? I can't afford my house anymore. And I can turn that laser beam towards that, or I can turn it towards my own personal passions, which would be exposing the world to people like you and building businesses and finding freedom through connections with other people. Who have been some people that have really helped you along your journey? Maybe people that you admired that were like mentors from afar, or direct mentors, I guess. Who had a hand in creating the Kate Volman that I see today?
Oh my gosh, so many people. I am so grateful for the work that I got to do at the chamber because I met so many wonderful leaders. I was in my 20s, right? Like I didn't know business. My dad had worked for the same company for like 41 years. That was entrepreneurship wasn't in my family. And so when I got to meet these incredible people who took me under their wing, who really saw in me something that I didn't even see in myself, I am so grateful for that. So obviously at the top of my list is Matthew Kelly, who I met like 15 years ago, because I actually asked him to come speak at an event when I was working at the chamber. Who knew, you know, a decade later, I'd be running his company. It's just incredible. So he's been a really big influence on me, just the way that he is in the world. He's written published his 37th book. He's an incredible author and speaker and entrepreneur, and he's just amazing. I will never forget someone very early on in my career who I was sitting at a boardroom table I was working at the Chamber of Commerce. I was in the boardroom and there were all of the board members sitting at the table and I was off to the side. And during the conversation, I almost said something, like I wanted to speak up and say something and I didn't because, you know, I was in my 20s and I shouldn't say anything. So right after that meeting, we were walking out and this woman, Roxana, she was fiery woman. She's got a hat on with like a big Superman logo. And we are leaving the room and she pulls me inside and she goes, "Were you going to say something in there?" And I said, "What?" Like, I thought she was going to yell at me. I go, "What are you talking about?" She said, "Did you want to say something?" And I said, yeah, I did. And before I even got the words out, she goes, "If you ever want to say something and you're in a room, you stand up and you say it." And I will never forget that because she really instilled in me this idea of leadership. Like, what does this mean when you have something to say that you are allowed to do that? You can speak your mind. You can speak your voice. And so people like her that just made such an impact on me. My boss, when I was working at the City of West Palm Beach CRA, she didn't know this at the time. One of the reasons why I took that role is because she was running the CRA and she was going, and I was going to work directly for her. And I remember thinking, that woman commands a room. When she walks in, people look and they listen. And I said, if I take this role, I'm going to learn so much from her. And I took it. Years later, I had to call her up and tell her, I said, "Did you know I was scared of you?" Like, I was kind of scared to take the role because she was just fierce. But I did. I learned so much from her. And so I'm grateful to that. And then, you know, I could go on and on, but there are so many incredible mentors that I've had in my life. And obviously, many mentors that I see in authors that I don't even know, but sure, that I see as mentors just because I really appreciate their work.
Yeah, I love that answer. And I think there's a lesson in there for the people listening and watching. It does require a certain amount of effort for you to jump in with both feet, you know, for a job like that, to be around somebody like that and then soak up as much as you can. I think sometimes people try to get in alignment with people because they think it's going to be the easy button, but it sounds like you put in the work and actually learn from these people. And you're almost like an eternal student in that facet. What do you think is an important quality or if somebody is learning from a mentor in order to get as much from that relationship as possible?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. When I think about mentors, I really look at it as I really try to soak in as much as I can, ask them really great questions, be very respectful of them and their time, right? I think a lot of people, when they
let me buy you coffee, right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. There's so much of that. And it's like, what can I do to make this person's life better? Like, what can I do to contribute to this person? And we might be thinking, well, you know, if you're reaching out to someone who's super fit, let's just say Elizabeth Gilbert, right? Like, I love Elizabeth Gilbert. She wrote a book, Big Magic. It's one of my favorite books. Well, she's got a lot of people. She's not going to go grab coffee with me, but what I can do is I can share her work and I can talk about her and I can, and while that might not mean a lot to her because she has millions of people doing that, I'm still going to do that because I so appreciate her as a mentor. And then when you do have someone that's closer to you as a mentor, there is nothing more powerful than you can do than to actually take what you've learned from that person and apply it.
Oh, man.
Apply what you've learned. Go back to them and say, I did this after our conversation. Now I'm in a different place. I totally had this big epiphany, this lesson. Would love to share it with you. And now I'm here and there's this new challenge. Can I present it to you? And they get excited because they're like, you actually did the work.
I mean, that is such a small percentage of people. I share this with, you know, people always ask me about Ryan or Scott and the relationships that I've built. And I'm like, it's not super complicated. Like the photo op is the least valuable thing. When I get around people like that, I was like, well, they're operators. Like you really want to get somebody's attention, like high level, bring them a complex problem because they're entrepreneurs and they love solving things and they have no repercussions. So they give you their answer and whether it's right or wrong, they don't care because it's not necessarily attached to anything they're doing. But what's really cool is when you go back a year later and you're like, hey, I did this. I did it with kind of this angle. This was the result. You know, that now it's this problem. You're absolutely right. That is the single best piece of advice I think I've heard on this podcast to date with working with mentors is they value that so much that they're like, oh, you're an operator as well, that your access like compounds, like the amount of access you get to these people really, really does change, right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, for sure. And you, I mean, what you just said is so true. Like we love when people come to us with those kinds of challenges. I would so much rather someone say, hey, I've tried this, I've done that. This is what I'm thinking about. What are your thoughts? Rather than what should I do? I don't know. There's so many questions after what should I do? Tell me what you've done so far. Like, where are you in the mix? Like, what do you know? What do you don't know? I don't, you know, I need some more context.
Somebody gave me a great piece of advice. I'll give it to you here and for everybody listening. They said, somebody comes to you with a problem, be completely willing to hear it, but make sure they show up with three solutions and one solution that they recommend. And then once you apply that, it changes kind of the dynamic, right? It becomes,
oh my gosh, that is what that is what I do with my team. I'm always like, no, don't ask me what I should do. Give me some options. And then what do you recommend? And then we can have a conversation. And that's a way better conversation for both of us.
Yeah, for sure. Because then you have objective thinking. Shout out to Dan Martell. That's who that's from. Buy Back Your Time. Have you read that?
Oh my gosh. Yes, I just got it. I'm in the middle of it.
Yeah. And actually, he's a good example of somebody that read the book. I mean, I shared out 15, 20 clips from it. I was posting it on socials. He messaged me out on Twitter. We started a conversation and now I've developed kind of a direct line of communication with him. You can do that these days with social media. You mentioned Elizabeth. Like, I bet you there's a platform that she's on where she doesn't have a massive following necessarily. And over time, she sees your name pop up. And then if you're ever at an event, she'd be like, oh yeah, Kate, I recognize you, because that's the world that we live in these days, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That happened to me with one of my mentors years ago is Anne Handley. I love, talk about writing. She is an incredible writer. And if her newsletter is awesome, it's called Anarchy. So good. Great. So clever. And she has a book, Everybody Writes, and she has a new edition that's out. And so I was quoting her and tweeting her and all the things way back when. And then I got to go to Content Marketing World and I got to meet her. And she was like, oh yeah, we've met. Like she actually kind of thought we had met at some point because she knew my name and I started interviewing different marketers and stuff. And so she was so kind to do an interview with me. And it was just, I was like, oh, this is so cool. Only just because I was, you know, promoting her work.
That's amazing. Well, it feels like I've met you, but we haven't actually met, right?
I know.
The world that we live in these days, right? So,
yeah.
But going back to the culture conversation, I think this could be one of the most valuable insights for this audience. Let's define what culture means to you, and then how do you create amazing culture in an organization?
Yeah. So culture is the most simple way is it is the essence of an organization. Right? Like it is the essence. It's in Matthew Kelly's book, The Culture Solution. He actually shares a definition, which is it's kind of like it's the visions, values, expectations, systems, behaviors, and beliefs that increase or decrease an organization's chances of fulfilling its mission that in turn increases or decreases how much people enjoy coming to work. And that's basically like a long way of saying it's the essence of your organization. How do people feel when they come to work? How do the people that engage with you in business, how do they feel when they leave? How are you being talked about when you leave the room? How is your organization being talked about online? It's branding, right? Like that's all branding. But the culture is, how are people feeling? I always say, you know, when you know that you work for a great culture is if you leave and you go home and the conversation at the table, at the dinner conversation at the table when you're having a dinner with your family, is it when you start talking about your work, does it bring everyone up or does it bring everyone down? Like, what is the vibe in your home? And when we have a great culture, then people enjoy coming to work. They enjoy working well together. And in Matthew's book, The Culture Solution, he shares the six principles of a dynamic culture. And what I love about these six principles is, and I tease Matthew, I said, this book is about culture, but it's life. Like, it's just the six principles are like just living a good life. I mean, you could talk about it in relationship and business and in anything. And so, yeah, it's a beautiful book.
It is a fantastic book. I guess for the audience, what are some of the core components that form a great culture?
So the first thing is to make culture a priority, right? Yeah. Like, a lot of people are not very intentional about creating a great culture, and we have to be intentional about it. Like, what are you doing to create a great culture? It's something that somebody has to be responsible for. Doesn't mean it's the CEO, right? The CEO has to want to create a good culture, but someone else in the organization can be tasked with what does that look like, and how are we gonna kind of look at these principles and actually have them go throughout the organization, which I think is really important. So we've got to make culture priority. Then we have to make mission king. Like, mission has to be at the forefront. How are we making decisions? We make decisions based on the mission. It's not only about what Justin wants or what Kate wants. It's like, no, it's about the mission. What is the mission of the organization? Does everyone know the mission? Is everyone on board with the mission? And then when we're making decisions, we're always looking at that as like the North Star of how we make decisions. It's letting people know it's over communicate the plan. So over communicate. We've got to have a plan and then not be afraid to over
communicate. That's the name of your newsletter, over communicate. I just realized that as you said it. Sorry to cut you off. Over communicate.
Oh my gosh.
I was just thinking of the "and" one. I have no idea why that hit me. Complete.
Oh my gosh, that would be so funny. That is not the name of it, but hey, branding. So yeah, over communicate. Like, it's communicate with our teams. The next one is to hire with rigorous discipline. We have to hire the right people, right? Absolutely. We can. It doesn't matter how great we're trying to make a culture, or what we're trying to do, or the processes we're putting in place. If we don't have the right people in the right seats, it's going to be a disaster. And the other pieces don't work.
One person can destroy an organization very, very
quickly. Oh my gosh. Yes. And that's why we have to hire people from the skill set, but also a cultural component. Like, do they fit the culture of the organization? Because the second you bring someone new into an organization, it's going to shift some things around. And then the next one is let people know what you expect. Like, clear expectations. This is one of the biggest challenges with leaders. We have this expectation gap. There's what we expect to happen, and then there's what actually happens. And there's this gap in between the two. And so, unfortunately, a lot of that, you know, distrust and resentment, all that stuff fills the gap if we're not closing that gap. And so we need to make sure that everyone on our team knows exactly what's expected of us. What does winning look like? Like, does your team know what winning looks like? And a really simple exercise to do this is to write down on a piece of paper, or to have your team member write down on a piece of paper, this is what I think is expected of me in my role. What is expected of me? And then you write down on a sheet of paper, this is what I expect of you. And then you sit down and you compare those two notes, and you're probably going to see some gaps that you get to close. And then you figure out, okay, now we're on the same page. I know what's expected of me. No one should go home feeling like they don't know if they're doing a good job. Like, we should all know what winning looks like. And then the last one is creating a coaching culture. We have to create a coaching culture where people feel, I mean, people want to grow. Like, we want to get better. And when you have the right people, when you have growth-minded people working for you, when you have them working with you, then you want to help them become the best version of themselves. And you want them to feel like, hey, this person has my back. People need a coach way more than they need a manager. And so when you create that coaching culture, what's awesome is now all these challenges with leaders that don't know how to have uncomfortable conversations, they don't know how to lead when things aren't so great. Well, now you have so many conversations with people on your team continuously, they're not as uncomfortable, right? Like they're literally just conversations. And so those are the six principles of a dynamic culture.
Yeah, I think they're so critical in the way that you broke them down in order too, right? Having being intentional about your culture and how that happens. And when you said, you know, being intentional, are you talking about the trainings, the coaching sessions, the team gatherings, the events? Like when you said have somebody in charge of that, is that what that person is actually doing?
Yeah, so I've been really fascinated to see how many organizations have someone like their title is, you know, what do they have, like director of like employee hugs, or I don't know, some of the most random titles. But, and obviously we certify dream managers. So there are some of our dream managers, they are full-time dream managers. So they are tasked with not only coaching their people, but also they do all of the, whether they're deciding to do an offsite retreat or any kind of things that are really going to help with the development of their people. And what's really interesting is with the dream managers, because they're now working on their people's dreams and they're uncovering, wow, there's a lot of people in my organization that have a dream of getting healthier or more fit. So now I'm going to bring in and have somebody come in and do meditation and yoga and fitness and learn what my people can learn more about their fitness and nutrition. And a lot of people have a dream of being financially free. And so a lot of these organizations now are bringing people in and on the finance side to help people create better budgets and plan more and then be able to purchase their first home. And so you're able to create those kinds of programs, which is important because if we're just, I just read an article the other day that was talking about how all of these older, the older generation is they're putting together pizza parties and doing things in the office. And then the Gen Z or Gen Xers, they're not coming to them and they're getting frustrated. But the older leaders never even asked them what it is that they wanted. It's not that these people don't want to show up and maybe do something together as a team, but it might not be what this person planned. So to be actually having those conversations around, hey, what would you guys be excited to show up for? Like, what would that look like? Instead, they're just kind of coming up with things without really asking their teams, which, you know, there's just a lack of communication there.
Yeah. You and I get a pizza party. I mean, when I was a kid, it'd be awesome. You just get a giant box. You all hang out, drink some pop. And these days it's like, it's experiential, right? Let's go rock climbing. Yeah. Let's go. It's very different. And that was actually my next question to you was going to be, you know, how do you manage a dynamic team, you know, in the hybrid work environment where not everybody's at a physical location and people have different interests. Some are introverts, some are extroverts. How do you create cohesion around a core set of cultural values with people that are just so vastly different?
Yeah, well, a big thing that we talk about with a lot of leaders, and it's actually part of the program, is the genius of your personality. So we go through the Myers-Briggs. So we use Myers-Briggs. There's obviously lots of other personality assessments, but just the very fact of understanding people's personalities assessment, right there, immediately, you start to see shifts in team members because you start joking like, oh, this person doesn't like that I pop into their office because they're highly introverted, but you have a highly extroverted person who's like bopping around like, how was your weekend? What's going on? And so at least now you understand how to communicate more with people. It's also with people that are very, very detail oriented, right? Like a lot of CEOs, executives, they are the visionaries, they're the dreamers. And then they have people on their team that are asking them all these little tiny questions or all the detailed stuff. And we're like, ah, we don't want to deal with any of that. You guys figure out that stuff. And so when we know each other's personalities a lot better, then we're able to communicate much differently. And when it comes to hybrid work, then this is obviously, everyone's kind of coming up with different ways to be able to collaborate with each other. Like, what does that look like? And I think that is partially that conversation really needs to happen within an organization. I think every organization is really different. You know, some people, they do want to bring the team together. I have a friend of mine, his entire team is remote. And twice a year, he gets them together. And it's always a wild experience. Like he gets an Airbnb in the mountains and they like go kayaking and golfing and they do all of these incredible things. And so they have a really fun time together, but they also get down to business and they sit and when they're in and they have those strategy sessions and they're figuring out what's the next two quarters look like and what are our goals? And, but it's always a really fun time. I actually saw them out one night and they were at this restaurant downtown and they had karaoke bar. So they were doing the karaoke after the, that's after awesome. The dinner. And so, but it's that he creates these experiences that people are like, oh, it's really fun. We get to go somewhere really cool. We have to get, we get to get out and have activities, but we also know that, hey, we're here to make things happen. We have big goals.
Yeah. And I think that's the future. It's kind of cool to see, just again, from you and I growing up, seeing our parents just, you worked at a factory for this many years and you got paid a pension and that was it. And your employer didn't really go anywhere beyond that. Now companies are having to get a little bit more flexible and, you know, find creative ways. We just did it. Like before this podcast, we had our family reunion. We do it once a month. We all get together, we have lunch, we do like an update. Hey, what are we working on? What's the big vision at Prime? Where are we going in 2024? Here's a couple really cool things that we're working on the back end. And then we brought in a speaker. And I always want to know, like, from the agents, did you get value from it? And one of them, like, we had a residential lender coming in and I told him next month we'll do a commercial lender, like being able to listen and interact with people, understanding that they don't want to have to come to the office every single Monday morning for a meeting like that, right? But once a month makes sense for us. So I think people listening, take a tip from Kate and figure out what works for you. And if it's once a year, going to Vail, Colorado, or going fishing or whatever, there's a million ways to do it. Last topic I want to dig into with you is really around your writing structure. Or can you help your viewers and listeners here develop a good writing routine? What do you think the core components of that would look like?
Yeah, so I've done a couple videos on writing habits just because I wrote my first book this year. Well, it published it this year. It took me a couple years to write it. And I really had to develop a writing habit. And so I definitely am a proponent of journaling on a regular basis. I mean, I journal daily just because I think it is such a powerful tool for leaders.
Is it just free journaling? Like you just write your thoughts kind of the day?
Or yeah. So I always share Julia Cameron's book, The Artist's Way, because she talks about morning pages. And morning pages are free flow, right? It's 3 pages of free flow writing right when you wake up. And she's very clear on it's got to be right when you wake up because it's before your mind is like thinking of all the things you have to do every day. And so it's like stream of consciousness writing. And so it's, but you don't have to do that, but that's just one way. And I think it's a beautiful, if you can, I think it's awesome because the things that show up when you do morning pages is very interesting. Just free flow writing. There's tons of resources to get writing prompts because I know that not everyone feels comfortable or they don't know where to start, right? Like a blank page is really challenging to start to fill. And so there's tons of writing prompts. What I love doing with my clients is, especially leaders who have never journaled before, after I have a session with them, I'll say, okay, are you open to me sharing a journaling prompt for you before our next call? And so I love that because I'm asking them a very specific question that I know is going to help them come up with a solution to their challenge. And so I think that's really important is to ask when we're going through a challenge, ask ourselves really great questions. And so the more that I journal, I just feel like I'm trying to come up with what's a better question that I can ask myself that I can journal on. And again, there's great resources in which to find those. For me, so I think there's different types of writing, right? I think everyone obviously can journal and write. Some people have a dream of writing a book. I know lots of people have a dream of potentially writing a book. And so when it comes to writing writing something like that, then we have to be really intentional about creating a practice. So for me, what that looked like was when I got really serious about writing a book, I decided I have to write every day. And so I was studying all the authors like Anne Lamott and Walter Mosley and Stephen King and Anne Hanley. And they all shared such similar advice when it came to writing. And they all shared a writing habit of writing every day. Like every day you sit down and write. And for me, I gave myself a goal to write at least 250 words a day. Because sitting down and writing, it can feel like a lot, right? Like we feel like we have to write these beautiful, brilliant words, but it doesn't look that way. And so, and this is what I learned too about from all these authors is I forget who calls it the vomit draft, but it's you create your vomit draft. So what does that mean? That means you just write. It doesn't matter if it's bad, however it looks. And that's okay. That's the whole point. You're just supposed to get everything out of your head onto the page. And so for me, it was 250 words. Now what happened was some days I would write 250 words and I was like, I'm done. This is it. That's all I got. But most of the time I would write 250 words and I would just keep going. And some days I wrote 550 and some days I wrote 1,000 and some days I wrote just the 250. And so giving yourself a goal of writing. And the reason why I think every day is important, especially in the beginning, is because it's just getting the reps in. It's just creating that habit. So you just know 250 words, it's not that much. And so, and maybe for you, you decide, hey, I'm just going to write 10 words or 20 words, whatever it is, whatever you can do to start, that's going to really help push you forward to actually do the thing every day. And so those are just that for me is what really pushed me over to be able to write. But it's, you know, it's a habit like anything else. You've got to sit down and actually just do it, even when you don't feel like it.
Yeah. And I think that is the clearest message I want to leave with everybody is just do the thing, right? Brushing your teeth, flossing, you know, all the things that you know will make you a better person. I think writing is definitely a habit that I think everybody should be doing because you end up finding yourself in it, right? And it ends up helping guide you towards the best version of yourself. Kate, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast. You've constantly been evolving who you are as a person and this constant search for information. I think it's fascinating. Everybody check out her book as well too. You'll be back on the podcast, I'm sure, you know, in our 10 minutes getting to catch up before the podcast, already learned, you know, that insatiable thirst for knowledge is continuing. So excited to follow your journey, Kate. And again, looking forward to having you on and seeing where you go from here.
Thank you so much, Justin. I so appreciate you.
Awesome. Take care, Kate. Thank you.